Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, Doug Mellard.
Hey, DB.
This is the part of the show at the beginning where you go ahead and say our actual names.
Doug. Other Doug. Hi, Doug. That's not me. Hey, Doug Benson.
There you go. Finally got there. You know, Karen Anderson and I have been doing Dino, Doug, and Karen for years, and she's just been very obstinate about never doing the opening the correct way. And so I'm just bringing that up because I'd like you to get your shit together.
All right. From now on, I got it.
Yeah, I have to say, hello, Doug Mellard. Well, I just respond in kind.
I'm just like, hi.
Hi,
Richard. Don't even get the name right.
Do you want to make a podcast? I'm just excited, dude, because today's Wide World of Dougs has one of the best Dougs ever. He wasn't hard to get because I already knew him, but I still didn't want to have him, you know, on the show right away because he might be hard to top just in terms of being an interesting person, a successful person, and a person with an extremely generic name. That's right. Doug Jones is going to join us today.
Perhaps our most diverse Doug, maybe.
I mean, the dude, you've seen him a bunch of times without even knowing it's him. He's Abe Sapien in the couple of Hellboy movies that Del Toro did. He's the Silver Surfer in that Fantastic Four movie. He's the fish man who gets it on with the lady in Shape of Water. He's in every gear. He's, what's his name? he's Hector Elizondo. He's Guillermo del Toro's Hector Elizondo. Because I think he's in every one of his movies, but we'll ask him. And then, of course, he's that scary creature with the eyeballs on it.
Oh, yeah.
In Pan's Labyrinth, that like one of the scariest creatures ever put on film, I think.
Absolutely.
And mostly scary because I worry for the safety of the, you know, of someone who would have eyes in their hands.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like just every time you go to open a doorknob or something, you're poking yourself in the eye.
Yeah, I did not think of that. And that would be an interesting thought in the middle of that film to start wandering off about, you know?
Yeah, it's. Yeah. We'll talk to Doug about it, but that guy's movies really—they really get under my skin, which is, you know, what they're supposed to do, I guess.
Yeah.
Did you like look up his IMDb? Is there anything?
Oh my God! Yeah.
Is there anything you're extra excited about talking to him about?
Those in particular, everything you just named, and yeah, the Pan's Labyrinth, that the Pale Man, still to this day. Like haunts my dreams. It's going to be a nice, like I finally almost therapeutic, you know, I get to talk to the man behind that character. And
oh, I've spoken to him and it doesn't make it easier to.
Hey, Doug, sorry to interrupt. Our guest is here.
Oh, awesome. Let's do this. Hello, this is the Wide World of Doug. So many Dougs, so little time. Today is August 8th, 2020. And Doug Jones is here. Hello, Doug.
Yes. Hey, thank you so much for having me. And, you know, I should clarify which Doug Jones I am. Because there are quite a few of us out there.
Well, it is a fairly generic name, but there's nobody else with the credits you have. We talked you up in the intro, and so people know that you're a versatile, talented actor who has gone through some. I mean, let's just get right into that question. Are you just like totally like zen when you're getting complicated prosthetic makeup and costumes? Like, are you just so good at sitting there and having that done? Or are you going a little crazy like anybody does?
Well, I would never boast and say I'm good at anything, but
very Doug-like quality.
Because we're not, but I would say, I think I sit quietly and stare out a window really well, even when I'm on my own. I'm a rather dull person. So when you tell me to be quiet and shut up and sit still while people do things to me, that's the easiest thing I can do. That's the easiest part of my day. But, people often ask about the makeup as though that must be just horrible, like hours and hours. I'm like, nope, best hours of my day. Nothing's required of me. I stand, I sit, I maybe move my elbow so they can get under my arm, whatever. You know,
wow.
But it's participatory.
you enjoy all your meals through a straw.
Right. Depending on the makeup, it's all different, right? If there's a big buildup on your face that you can't get to your teeth, well, then yes, you'll be doing a straw all day.
Right. What about the itching though? Is that a real thing?
Yeah, that's more psychosomatic, really. Yes, the things will bug, but so you can just put. I just do the pressure thing, just like push on it and then will it away.
Oh God!
Yeah, it's the other one that's really weird that you must never get used to because you've played so many, interesting, bizarre characters. Mm-hmm. The old you just never get used to walking by a mirror, do you?
Oh yeah, well yeah, right. Depending on how long the production goes, yeah. But when first of all, you in a makeup trailer, you're usually watching the process being built on you in a mirror. Yeah. So you see it one piece at a time.
Sure.
You see the whole build, but there are times when I've fallen asleep in my trailer at lunchtime. Mm-hmm. And then I'll wake up with a rap on the door, like, "Hey, it's time. We're back from lunch." You're like, "What am I doing? Who's right? What's this on my face? Ah!"
Yeah. You look in the mirror. You're like, "I'm a fish today."
I thought this was Alien Day. Never mind.
Like, is there a type of creature or character that you've done the most of? Because all the ones I've seen, they're all so different.
Oh, well, thank you. I've 35 years now racked up of playing creatures. There have been a couple of duplicates. I played a kangaroo man-human hybrid twice, once in Tank Girl and Warriors of Virtue. I have played an insect overgrown to massive size in two movies. One, Mimic. That was my first movie with Guillermo del Toro. And also a bug buster, it was called Bug Buster. That's worth looking up because it is just a campy, hilariously awful romp. and I have a hand to hand fight with Randy Quaid in a cave while I'm wearing a big bug suit. So that's a story that you'll want to look at.
How Randy Quaid was he at that time?
Not the Randy Quaid of today. Can I tell you the Randy Quaid story real quick? This is a good one.
Of course.
Oh yeah.
Okay. This will be in my autobiography. So I'm in this, I'm a 6 foot something, a cockroach looking bug thing. That means our legs are coming out of the side of my body. I've got six legs. I've got a stinger coming out of my ass. I've got wings. I've got, you know, this bug head that's way above my own, and my own face is stuck in the neck of this bug. So there's netting over my face and little furry things come in. I can barely see. My front arms have 6 foot long pinchers on them, fiberglass blades that are pinchers. Now, in this part of the story, Randy Quaid is like a crazy Coke bottle glasses wearing general who's been brought in from, he's out of retirement to help this town overcome its bug infestation problem because these killer bugs are like the town people are dying. Well, he's like, yeah, okay, let's kick some bug ass. So this leads him to a cave outside the town, and it ends up being just him going into this cave, like with weapons all over him, to take on whatever he finds. Well, that's where he finds me, the mother bug. I'm guarding my pile of eggs, as you do. And so he's like, ah, yeah, yeah, yeah. And so he guns me down, and I don't take, bullets don't harm me. So then he pulls out a flamethrower. I don't burn. He pulls out a CO2 gun to like freeze me. I don't freeze. So he throws all of his weapons down, and then it gets weird. he puts up his fists and he says, okay, you and me, mano y mano. So I think that was a precursor as to the Randy Quaid that we see today on Twitter.
He's still in that cave.
Right. But anyway, this hand-to-hand fight went a little amok. As we choreographed it out, I'm talking to him through the netting of my neck. I can barely see him. Randy, hey, listen, I can't see very well, and the pincher blades on this, my arms, I don't know how sharp they are. No, don't worry, Doug, buddy. I'll be fine. You'll be great. Just do what you got to do. All right. So action, and we go through the first take of this fight scene, and it's a handheld camera following us through the entire choreography. So we're bouncing off cave walls, rolling around on the ground, getting back up. Da-da-da. We end up with him on his back on the ground and me on top of him. And cut. Well, I had to get pulled off by a couple of people and put onto my special bug chair because with my stinger coming out of my ass, I couldn't sit in a real chair. So I'm on this bicycle seat leaning forward going, and I ask one of the assistant people to help me, can you go check on Randy? I didn't see him get up. And so they is this young lady goes over and says, and then I hear Randy's voice from across the cave. Doug buddy, can you hear me? Yeah. Yeah, everything's fine. Don't worry. Do what you got to do. I'm all good for nothing. Let's go. All right. I guess he's fine. The next voice I heard was a young production assistant, a young fella, and he's about 20. Can I get some ice over here? I can't stop the bleeding.
Oh, God.
So apparently I had gashed Randy Quaid's forearms, both of them. And so he was bleeding out. So bless his heart, they pressure bandaged him. He taped up. And he went back in for take two. Fine. He's great. All good. So that was the day that I almost killed Randy Quaid. Not how I wanted to be remembered.
I'll just put on pressure bandages sometimes because they relax me.
Right. Exactly.
I got to say, I love that you did all the voices and sound effects for that story. Oh.
I'm really looking forward to your autobiography on tape.
Thank you.
I think we should substitute all the bugs for Doug's and just make the Doug Master movie. You know, let's put that
together. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Maybe we could get, Doug McClure's dead. What about Doug? Doug Bradley, he's an actor that played Pinhead in the Hellraiser movies.
What? Pinhead is a Doug?
What?
Yes. A British actor named Doug Bradley. We're familiar with each other.
Wow.
Are you rivals?
No. I don't care. Take the job. I don't care.
You're not worried about that when Bug Bradley's in town.
Right. That's his mom's name. Bug Bradley.
I'm going to confess something. Both the Pinhead character in Hellraiser and the character you play in Pan's Labyrinth with the eyes on his hands.
The Pale Man, yes.
Pale Man. Both of those characters, what's scariest to me about them is that I worry for their well-being.
Doug, do you want to talk about this?
I do, because I just worry that, like, if you have eyes in your hands, you're going to accidentally poke yourself in the eye,
no,
doing almost anything.
Right, right. Yeah, a simple high five could be that blindness.
Right. It could be brutal. Where's my contact?
Yeah, right. Well, yes. Yeah, so somebody put, you know, since the pandemic broke out, somebody put a meme up of the pale man with my eyeballs in a jar next to the sink while I'm washing my hands.
Oh my God. Yeah. How you mentioned contacts? How would you even wear glasses? How would that even work? There's so many questions.
Yeah, right. It goes on and on. I know.
The pale man just has to live with his vision problems.
Well, thank heaven for laser surgery, right?
But man, so easy to find out if there's something you know, underneath the bed when you're pale man.
Just drape your arm over. Oh yeah, good.
We're good.
We're good.
How long did pale man take to get into?
Yeah, that's a long one. Yeah. You know, an average makeup transformation with prosthetics and paints is going to take you anywhere from 3-4 hours is about an average. The pale man was 6 hours a day.
Wow.
And that was a lot.
When you say a day, it means you're in the chair at like 3 a.m.
Oh yeah. Before everybody else gets there, for sure. I'm the first one in, last one out. Uh-huh. And I was also the fawn in that movie, El Fauno. Right.
Yeah.
And he was a 5-hour makeup application, but also with, there's suits and there's makeups, right? Now, a suit you slip into, zip up the back, a makeup is glued onto you or painted on you, right? So a lot of these are combinations of some suit, some makeup. So the fawn from Pan's Labyrinth and the fishman from Shape of Water. Oh, that's another one. I played two fishmen. Yes.
Right.
To call back on I was Abe Sapien in the Hellboy movies and I was the amphibian man in Shape of Water. And to clarify there you go. Abe Sapien from the Hellboy movies was a 7-hour makeup application every day from head to toe with 12 prosthetic pieces that were glued on and blended into my own skin. And then paints connected everything. That took a long, long time. Three makeup artists, 7 hours a day. The amphibian man from Shape of Water was only 3 hours a day because most of it was a slip-on suit with glued on and then some mechanics built in. And you know there was some construction to do every day with it. But the pre-sculpture, pre-painting process, that takes months ahead of time. So that's thankfully, I don't have to stand there for that.
Right. I like only 3 hours. Like that's nothing.
Right, exactly. If you're putting on eyelashes for that long, that would be a long time, right?
if you're sitting there for 7 hours before anyone else is on set, are you just exhausted by the time you start doing lines?
Yeah. Well, you feel like you've put in a full day of work already.
Right.
And now it's like when everyone else, you should be clocking out and going home. It's like, yep, let's get started.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's really, but also when you're in a particularly scary makeup, it must just trip everybody out on set all day.
Oh, yeah.
Being regular.
Yeah. Well, you know, and at the beginning of my career, you know, the creepier, like, characters with fangs and claws that I played, it's kind of fun to creep around a corner and go, and make some, and make the craft service person jump out of their skin and throw buns. But the older I get and the more I've done this, it's like that kind of it poor. I just want to get out of it and go home.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what people realize is that, you know, if it's really, really good makeup effects and prosthetics, that it's not Mission Impossible where you just rip it off in one piece.
No, right. Exactly. That was. Oh, I laugh out loud when I saw Tom Cruise just grab one side of a face like that, just go rip and hard while he's on the run, please.
Yeah. And he's usually like in Mission Impossible 3, he's Philip Seymour Hoffman at one point. So he's also gained a tremendous amount
of weight. Exactly. He just said, yeah, unzip that real quick. Makeup removals, that's all a part of the process. So to get out of an Abe Sapien or to get out of the pale man or the fawn characters that we were just talking about, that takes 2 hours a day. So when everyone else is wrapped, go home. Good night. We'll see you tomorrow. I have 2 hours left.
Yeah. Oh. That stuff. If you don't take it off carefully, it just destroys your skin.
Exactly. And you've got to get back into it the next day. So they take extra steps to make sure that I'm all taken care of and carefully removed and then moisturized and yada, yada, yada. It's a process.
That's the other thing is Tom Cruise doesn't scream in pain when he pulls the mask off.
right. Because if it was on good enough to fool everybody, it was glued on really good.
Really?
Right. Yeah. Right. So you can't just rip that off from one side. Get the seam on the jawline and give it a tear. Yeah.
Well, I'm really impressed by you, Doug, because, you know, Jim Carrey claims to have PTSD from playing the Grinch.
Well, yeah, I've heard that story. I still scratch my head over that.
It seems like a, you know, at least from the neck down, it doesn't seem that uncomfortable.
Yeah, no. And I've, you know, with the prosthetics, yes, he was glued in. He had contact. The contact lenses is, that's probably one of the worst parts is when you've got a big what they call scleral lenses. That's the lenses that are big enough to cover the whites of your eyes.
Right.
When they put those in, you feel them every blink. You're never not aware that you have those in your eyes all day. So between that and being glued into a makeup that you know, clogs your nose and maybe hampers what you can do with your mouth and all that. And you can't, nobody can gauge when claustrophobia will set in, when you'll have a freak out. That just, nature just says, it's time for you, you're freaking out now and you can't control it. So I don't want to poo-poo Jim Carrey on that. But thankfully that's never been my issue.
And are you technically Guillermo del Toro's Hector Elizondo? Have you been in one of his films?
Hector Elizondo. Wait, which? It was like from Pretty Woman.
Yeah, he's in every Gary Marshall movie.
Gary Marshall, that's it. Yeah, yeah. Yes, or Johnny Depp to Tim Burton, or...
Tim Burton makes fun without Johnny every once in a while.
Right. Which Guillermo does with me as well. Yeah.
Okay. Johnny passed on Planet of the Apes.
Oh no. Well, right now, Guillermo del Toro is working on a movie right now called Nightmare Alley, and I'm not in that. And I was not in Pacific Rim. So there, yeah, I take a breather here and there. The thing is, if he doesn't have any creatures in the movie, what he normally does have creatures. But in Pacific Rim, they were all like, you know, the size of buildings and they were CG mostly. So if it's not, if there's nothing for me specifically as a creature, then he doesn't really think of me. He does not think of me as a human. So all of his human character, other directors have. I don't know why he can't think of me that way. Bless his heart.
And is he as fun on set as he is whenever he shows up somewhere and talks?
Yes. If you've ever seen behind the scenes videos, interviews with him, live Q&As, he is every bit as charming in real life. That's who he is. And I've known the man for over 20 years now. We met in 1997 on Mimic. He has not changed at all. He's still the exact same person. He's kept his ethics and morals in place. He's a really stand-up guy, and he's kept his sense of humor in place. That's the most important part. We laugh on set all the time. And he's very self-effacing, makes fun of himself as long as the day is.
I know that he is very funny, but you know, when I think of the Pale Man and so many other creatures, funny just seems to be a strange word.
Right? No, right. But yeah, you find when you work in the world of horror and when you do lots of dark projects and play lots of imposing figures, the other actors that I know who have played, you know, creepy monsters are the sweetest, funniest people you'll ever talk to. It's the comedians out there, Doug Benson, who can be, you know, I've never had a personality issue or I've never met a prick who plays monsters.
Wow.
That's good. I feel like I have a foot in both worlds, because I did get to play, I have played a few zombies.
Yes. Yeah. Right.
So I have been through the process. Like I've had the whole face cast, which like a lot of people
get that.
Would be very, very intimidated by that process.
Yeah, I find it relaxing when they're doing the head and shoulders cast on you, and it's like a spa day.
Holes. You just have two nose holes, and that's it.
Right.
So, let's go back to the, let's get into the Doug-ness of it all. Your parents, did they give you ever give you a reason for naming you Doug?
They just liked the name. Yeah, but I was number four. I have three older brothers. And, my oldest brother was named after my dad. He was Robert III. My next brother, Thomas, was named after my mom's brother. Richard was named after another brother of one of my parents that passed away. And then by the time they got to me, it's like, oh, Douglas. Yeah, let's go with that for no other reason.
I like that it's RJ, TJ, DJ. Like, they all are good initials.
Yeah, all good initials. Yeah, exactly. So,
and then Doug.
Right, but I like tend to go by Dougie in my real life, like with friends and family.
Oh, that's adorable.
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah, well, it's especially adorable now that I turned 60, for crying out loud. Hey, Dougie.
And a man that's played so many monsters and goes by Dougie. That's amazing.
I know. Aren't I precious?
We've talked a lot on the podcast about how the name Doug, you know, or Dougie is often not taken very seriously. So do you think you've maybe jumped into this monster world to maybe fuck that notion?
Well, no, I didn't actually take initiative to jump into the monster world. The monster world kind of found me. You know, when you land in Hollywood in 1984, 85, and you are tall, 6'3", 140 pounds, and you have a background as a mime, the creature effects guys are like, oh my God, she's great. And they want to build stuff on that. So I,
were they creature effects guys or were they creatures who do creature
effects? He's perfect. All right. But can I talk about the confusion a couple years ago? Cutting 2 years ago, there were three Doug Jones's issues, and I think even Us Magazine did a profile on the Doug Jones confusion of that year. It was the year that Shape of Water was going through the award season, and it was up for 13 Oscar nominations, so my name was in the press quite a bit. And Doug Jones, the Alabama senator, I think he had just finished his big race to get into the Senate. And then also Dougie Jones from Twin Peaks, the character that Kyle MacLachlan played.
Dougie on Twin Peaks?
Yeah, yes.
I thought it was just guy who wants to eat some pie.
Right. Well, I think Kyle MacLachlan, it was another personality that took over him for a while named Dougie Jones. So I actually met Kyle at a pre-Oscar party that very year. And I went up to Kyle. I said, "Hi, Kyle, I'm Doug Jones." Yes, you are. I've been wanting to reach out to you. Oh my gosh. Right. So, and then Doug Jones, Alabama senator, and I get confused on Twitter all the time. I get hate mail. I get praise mail for all of my political decisions. And he's been told how wonderful he was in Hocus Pocus.
Hey, Billy Butcherson.
Right. He was good, though. He was very good.
Yeah, yeah. But you were talking about the Dougie Doug. There's also that I have also been flippantly called by people. Hey, Dougie Doug, or hey, Dougie Fresh.
Right.
I get those all the time.
Yeah.
Do you too, Doug?
Yeah. All of us.
People love that. And Dougie Doug was our very first guest on this show.
Well, look at it.
You know, because that's
two for one. You got a lot of bang for your Doug buck.
Yeah. Right. We got all the Doug we could handle on that.
Yeah.
How crazy is it that you were in a movie early on in your career called Lady in the Water?
Right. before I was the gentleman in the water. Right. That was my one M. Night Shyamalan movie. And I was a Tartutic in that. We were the tree monkey sort of guys made out of branches and another hybrid of tree ape sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And we were the one creature that could kill the grass wolf creature in it. So that's a long story. If you don't know what I'm talking about, this is another podcast.
166 acting credits.
Well, says IMDb. Yeah.
According to them, do you think there's more? Or?
Oh, there's a couple more. Back from the 80s, they didn't get, I'm sure. But
like initially, you probably played characters in things that didn't necessarily have a credit.
But that's very, very possible. Yeah.
Yeah, because the first thing they say that you played a character in called Tim is called The Newly Deads.
The Newly Deads, yes. Well, Oh dear, that was a straight to VHS movie.
Oh, so remember you, those?
Remember those? Yeah.
Wow.
The Newlyweds. There was a zombie. Well, no, they were calling them transvestites back in the day. A transvestite checked into a hotel and murdered the proprietor murdered him or her, and so that transvestite comes back as a zombie and goes on a killing spree 20 years later, and it's like a honeymoon resort. So I'm the first young newlywed to be murdered in the Newlyweds by a transvestite zombie.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's another one. I mean, that one's probably too many to count. How many times you've been undead or a ghost?
How many times I've been killed? I've risen from the dead. Ghosts, zombies, animated corpses, all of it. All of the countless.
How does let me put this delicately, but how does a gentleman like yourself, how do you end up playing a dead Iraqi soldier in 3?
Oh, heavens to Murgatroyd. Well, yeah. So those are 3 things I'm not: dead Iraqi soldier. So it was, the movie was 3 Kings.
Yeah.
And the issue was that the creature effects shop that created the look of this dead lying in the desert. If you remember 3 Kings, Mark Wahlberg, George Clooney, Ice Cube, and Spike Jonze are all walking. They're military guys, and they're on some kind of a mission. I forget, in the Middle East.
Yeah, they find out there's some gold, and
That's it. So they're looking at the after effects of an explosion that went off in the desert, and there's a bunch of dead soldiers lying around. So I think Mark Wahlberg actually tripped over my leg, and I'm lying there in the sand. Well, originally the idea was just to make a silicone dummy to lie there and have that, and that was going to cost them $20,000 to make that. Well, Doug Jones was cheaper for the day. So the creature effects team, Alterian Studios, they had already worked with me. They did my Billy Butcherson makeup on Hocus Pocus and many other projects. So they were like, they already had a mold of my face. Let's just create a look on him that's like a burned up soldier that we can throw. And so there I was. I got on a plane and I flew to some desert somewhere in New Mexico or El Centro, California. And I laid in the desert sand for 3 days. And, hey, a gig's a gig.
Yeah, but also, fully credited gig, I guess.
Right. Well,
you clearly didn't have any lines.
No, of course not. And I'm honestly, when you watch the movie, I'm on screen for an actual second, 1001, and we're done.
Wow. Yeah. That's, that David O. Russell, he was like, he had some issues with a couple of his movies with viral videos of him not getting along with actors.
Oh, I was there for it. Yeah. I heard screaming one day and I didn't ask questions.
It was Clooney.
I think it was between, I think that day was between Clooney and David. Yes.
Yeah. Cause I guess he famously didn't get along with him, but there's no footage of that.
No.
But he does that, he has plenty of actors that seem to love him and work with him over and over again. So, just gotta keep trying, I guess.
Yeah. Well, no, he made a good product. So I would work with him. I'd work with him again,
put that out there that, hey, David O. Russell.
Right. But I say work with him again. Can I really say I worked with him if I laid in the sand with my eyes closed? Really? Yeah. I took it. Yeah. I was so directable.
you worked with him in the sense that you were willing, you did what he needed you to do.
There you go. Right. Okay. Thank you.
But then right after 3 Kings is one of my favorite things you've ever done, because you were one of the gentlemen in the episode Hush of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yes, yes, indeed. Now there's a show and a fan following that has never gone away. Right. Those Buffy fans are extremely loyal. And, I was just on the one episode. I was the leader of the gentleman on the Hush episode. And I have been on the cover of Buffy magazine. I've been featured in that magazine several times. There have been action figures of me, both in 3-inch, 6-inch, and 12-inch size of the gentleman. You know, I for a guest star role, you would never guess. I never could have foreseen that kind of long lasting shelf life of that character. Yeah,
and it's such a special episode of that show. Like. Yeah. Firing in all cylinders at the time, and then
totally. And Joss Whedon himself he wrote that episode and directed it. So often show creators, you know, oversee things, but he really got his hands dirty with that one because it was a passion project for him, that episode. And the network at the time told him, you know, ooh, what a gamble! You can't, because I took everyone's voice away from the town, and we did over half the episode in complete silence.
Yeah.
So, you know, they're thinking, well, if you take sound away, we're going to lose viewers. And it was quite the opposite. You know, when you take verbal dialogue away and you have to watch the visuals, people lean into their TVs and pay way closer attention. So
I think A Quiet Place, the John Krasinski movie, is a ripoff of that episode of Buffy. And the thing about that that episode that was crazy to me is that you were clearly all riding around on hoverboards and they weren't even invented yet.
Right. No, do you know? Yeah, right. We were floating about 6 inches off the ground, and that does baffle people. How did you guys do that? Well, if you saw us full body, floating down like a sidewalk or down a hallway. We were in hip harnesses with wires going up past our shoulders to a T-bar on a track that was going down. Wow. Somebody was pulling us along. If you saw us from the chest up, like just in a close-up shot floating down into the room, that we were standing on a platform with wheels on it, and some poor PA had to go and push us around, which was quite... It was a balancing act.
I love the sound effects. How fun was that, you know, fake hoverboarding around? Was that fun or was that
dangerous? Oh, no, it was great fun. Yeah. But it was also the hanging from the hip harnesses, that was, you're safe. You it's like zip lining, right? So totally great. It was, but the boards, there was no way to strap us to the boards. So we were just balancing. It was like surfing, right? Or just skateboarding. So, and we're at the mercy of someone else's stop and start technique. So we had to really work in concert with each other, like, and you know, so when we float into the room into the dorm room of that college campus and rip that poor kid's heart out surgically, you know, floating into the room and we split there. I had my gentleman partner with me, and the two of us split and went to both sides of his bed. So there was there's angles and directions to go, and all on wheels. And both of us had our own navigation people on the floor trying to work it. It was quite an operation.
Yeah, but it got pulled off because it's a very effective episode. We have to go to a quick commercial break. But when we come back, I'm going to ask you about a character named Pencilhead.
Yeah, you are.
We'll be right back.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
We're back. And I thank everybody for staying through the ads. I know I gave a tremendous tease to get you to stick around.
Yeah, of all the parts I played, this is the one to talk about, folks.
It's so funny to me that I really like all in the movie Mystery Men. There's a lot of wacky superheroes because they have like a superhero audition sequence.
Right, and, right.
So you're Pencilhead, but my question is, I mean, obviously everyone can imagine what Pencilhead would look like.
Right.
But right. What would Pencilhead do in a situation to save the day?
Well, okay. So the story behind this, right? Backyard barbecue party. Loser superhero team is auditioning all the neighbors to make an addition to their superhero team. So everybody's coming up with like it's basically a big cosplaying party with people saying I'm so and so and here's my powers at an audition table. Well. What was scripted for me was I'm Pencilhead, and then I have a kid with me who steps out from behind me dressed the exact same way, saying, and I'm son of Pencilhead. And our director was Kinka Usher. And Kinka Usher was more known for tons of TV commercial directing he had done. Uh-huh. And I had appeared in 4 of his TV commercials before this. That's why he knew me, and that's why he just kind of gave me a call, like, would you want to come be a Pencilhead? Heck yeah. So... So he encouraged, oh good. I've got a leaf blower out my window. Sorry.
I was wondering what that was.
So maybe we're morphing into one of your monsters.
Right. It's happening.
I can't stop it no matter what, even if I'm on a podcast.
But let me shut the window real quick. Yeah. Hang on.
Okay. Hang on. Just glide over to the window and shut it.
I'm trying to tell my Pencilhead story.
Right. I'm sorry. So you can edit this, right?
Oh, no. That was the best part.
And I'm glad it's not a video call. You would have seen me stand up with my underwear.
But the only way to Zoom.
Pencilhead. Yes. So Kinka Usher encouraged ad lib going off script. So he wanted us to add whatever we wanted to. So what I added that did stay in the movie was we erase crime. So Pencilhead erasers, get it? and so that stayed in. But what great fun though. That gosh, who else?
You could also say that you rub out crime.
Oh, right. Perfect. See, had I had you there, do you know who was in line right before me? Was the Waffler, played by Dean Cook.
Right.
Yeah, the Waffler.
Yeah.
He'll turn anything into a waffle.
Right.
How much was that, like 9 hours in the makeup chair with the pencil head?
No, gosh. Right. I was wearing like a yellow a sort of like coveralls, right? The cover of like a number 2 pencil. And then I had a homemade cardboard thing around my head that looked kind of like an eraser head and a bunch of pencils stuffed in my... Oh, you know, little tidbit on that too. If you watch that little scene in Mystery Men again, you'll see there's 2 initials on my... on my breast. The wardrobe department did a faux pas. They did, I don't want to get anybody in trouble, but it's already been pointed out many times and like, this didn't match. My name in the script was Pencilhead. The wardrobe department put a PM on my chest. So that they thought it was Pencil Man. So that stayed in the movie.
You know, that's what happens. The wardrobe department really determines what characters are called. I just have one more movie question for you because this has got to feel weird for you that you played a thin, infected man in a movie called Quarantine 10 years ago.
Well, now let's review. Now remember on Three Kings, I was dead Iraqi soldier. 3 things I'm not. Here we have 3 things that I am. A thin, infected man. Quarantine, boy, that was, makeup artist Rob Hall got a hold of me to play. This is a remake of a Spanish language movie called Rec, R-E-C. where it was like basically the record button. So it's one of those handheld reality found footage kind of movies. It was a TV station doing a ride along with the fire department. They get a distress call at a building and where there's been some kind of a rabies outbreak. People are eating each other. Let's go investigate. So they send a pretty young reporter, Jennifer Carpenter, to cover the story, as you would do. So they get into the building, and while they're in there, the government shuts the building down, like helicopters surrounding with spotlights, and they're shooting anybody who tries to get out of the building. Not much different from what we're living through today. By the time they get through the building and people are eating each other and dying, everyone's dying off. Jennifer Carpenter and her cameraman make it to the very end of the film, of course. And they make it to the top floor of the building where this one guy's been living for many years that no one's really seen come or go. He's just, they don't know much about him. They get into his apartment. And of course, he was the epicenter of the problem. He's the one who developed this strain of rabies that was fast acting and fast mutating. So he was his first test subject. So here I am playing that role, a tall, skinny, aged, decrepit guy with sores all over him and saggy skin and who's walking around with rabies. So they had to give me like an inflated sort of like a swollen forehead and long gray hair and bad teeth and saggy jowls, saggy pectorals, a saggy gut. So this is a lot of glued on prosthetics. Now people ask often, now what's the longest makeup you've ever had? Well, this was it. The makeup test for this day, we did a makeup test the day before I filmed my scene. It was 11 hours.
Oh,
11 hours. But then again, you're talking about all I was wearing. Yeah, when you walk into your trailer for the day and you see your wardrobe hanging in your closet, it was a gross old pea-stained pair of white briefs. Oh. Period. So that's when you know the makeup's going to take a long time. Because they're covering all the rest of you. So there were and they gave me pointier shoulders than I have. They glued a lot of little pieces on and had to blend the edges in and do a paint job. Now, recently, if you're following along at home, folks, if you go to my Instagram page, that would be at Actor Doug Jones across all the social medias. But one of the most recent pictures I put up was a photo from quarantine. So you can get a look at that makeup up close.
Oh, cool.
The movie itself came out in, I think they were filming in, by the time they got to that scene, especially, they were filming in night vision. So I was kind of all green and white, right? But the picture on Instagram shows you what a beautiful makeup job they did before that effect was added in.
Whoa. Very cool.
Yeah.
Between that and being a part of The Strain, did you feel...
I know, right?
Like, am I prepared for this pandemic?
Viruses are us, yeah. Yeah, now in the strain, I was an ancient vampire. I wasn't a human who turned. I was one of the originals, yeah, in that. I did six episodes as that, and great fun. And another Del Toro job, by the way.
Are you a vampire in What We Do in the Shadows?
Oh, gosh. Can we talk about What We Do in the Shadows?
I mean, people are saying that, like, the show just keeps getting better and better. I still catch up. I'm still back in the first season.
So bingeable. I love this show so much. Well, you saw, did you see the movie, by the way, the original movie?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. Huge fan of the movie.
Right.
And then, you know, now I want to watch all the series, but I just, you know.
Right. Well, I had missed the original film myself until a friend of mine said, have you seen What We Do in the Shadows? I haven't even heard of it. And, oh, my gosh, you got to come over. So I went over, you know, a night of popcorn and burgers and laughing my ass off at that hilarious, genius movie. So then when I got a call from Manager Bruce at Omnipop saying, What We Do in the Shadows being made into a TV series. They want you for a guest role in the pilot. What? So, of course, I jumped at it to play the Baron Afanas. It's spelled A-F-A, like Afanas, but I think, is that like half an ass or Afanas? But, so I was supposed to just be in the pilot. just to wake up. The Baron had come from the old country to check on these doofuses that were supposed to take over North America, and they have failed miserably at doing so, as you'll watch the series. So he's come to check on their work, and so he's up. He's arrived in his coffin. He's up in the attic of the house they live in, and they come up. He wants to have audience with them now. So it's this grand entrance I give, and I'm stark naked with no genitalia. So I think, again, another 6-hour makeup job from head to toe.
And you're like, oh no, Silver Surfer again?
Again. Oh, the little side story. Yeah, did you ever? There was a clip. Somebody in the CG department on the Silver Surfer movie did a sequence with the Silver Surfer with junk dangling.
Oh my God!
It went viral around the internet back in 2007, I think, and I can't find it ever since. But it was
that wasn't you, and it was just CGI'd out. That was
right. Yeah, that's how I showed up on set, and they just kind of had to fix it.
How did you train yourself to talk so much like Lawrence Fishburne for that role?
Oh well. Well, unfortunately for me, they actually got Lawrence Fishburne. Lawrence, great actor. He's, of course, you can't poo-poo Morpheus now, can you? He's great. But I don't think any actor wants to see their work and their heart and soul that I poured into a role be replaced. I don't want to see any part of my performance be replaced. But so that was an unfortunate surprise. But we're all better now. We've all made up.
Oh, right.
You really talked to him about it?
No, not to him. I've never met Lawrence myself, but the studio and I. But what we do in the shadows, you were mentioning, I was supposed to just do the pilot and be done. And they were going to like send my coffin down a river and be done with me. And while we were filming, one of the show creators, Jermaine Clement, said, this has been going so well today. We're having such a great time with you. Would you want to stick around?
Oh my God.
I was about to go back and to start season 2 of Star Trek Discovery at the time. And I said, gosh, I would love nothing more, but I'm also committed to this series regular gig up in Toronto. And he's like, we'll keep the door open for you. So they sure did. The two productions worked it out with each other. So by episode 6 of season 1, they wrote the Baron's Night Out, which was probably the funniest half hour of television I have ever been involved with, where I wake up again from my slumber and I decide I want a night on the town. And I want these people, my minions, to show me around this new world of theirs called Staten Island. Staten Island, right? which I'm led to believe is the epicenter of all that goes on in North America. So it was close, right. It was
pretty accurate, yeah.
So that's great fun. And then that was supposed to be the end of me, right? They were supposed to be done then. Well, then during the filming of that, Jermaine Clement said one more time, when they're putting your charred body away, because I do, accidentally sunlight hits me, I burn up and sizzle to the ground. While they're putting my carcass away for a final goodbye ceremony, some blood wine drips onto my face, and my eyes glow for just a minute before they close my coffin up. So that's like, and that was on purpose so that they can bring me back again if the occasion should ever arise.
I love that. That's so cool.
Oh my God.
Great.
I definitely want to, I'm just going to jump right to Baron's Night Out. Just watch that episode.
Yeah.
So how many, Doug Jones, how many Dougs would you say you've known in your life that have like actually been, you know, that you've been like friends with or business associates with?
Oh, wow.
Outside of Doug Bradley, I guess.
Yeah, there's Doug Bradley. There's also another actor who specializes in creatures and monsters, Douglas Tate. And otherwise,
does he have a particular monster we'd know
that you would know? I believe is there like a Sasquatch and Slim Jim commercials?
Yes.
Okay. Oh my God.
Yeah. I believe that's him. Right. And he was also in the Hellboy reboot movie that I was not in, that came out a year and a half ago.
Yeah, with David Harbour.
With David Harbour. Yeah. Douglas Tate was, and I forget the monster. I saw the movie and now I can't remember it, but he was one of the bad guy, nemesis's monster sidekicks in that.
Oh God. It was going to be so weird if you said he was the new Abe Sapien.
No. Well, Abe only showed up at the end of the movie as a hand on a piece of glass. And then I think there was going to be more of him if they were to go on and do a sequel, but it did not perform well. So,
right.
What do you think the idea was to reboot something so soon? Like the first Hellboy is perfectly, it's not like it doesn't hold up or anything.
But yeah, right. we were all hoping for a Hellboy 3 to continue because Hellboy 2 left you hanging. Sure. So we wanted to finish the trilogy, of course. Guillermo del Toro always had a third part in mind. Ron Perlman was anxious to do a part 3 and finish up the story for all the fans. But again, I don't know if I asked about the budget of the new Hellboy reboot, and it was about a third of the budget that we made Hellboy 2 for.
Right.
So that's probably your answer. Is that a part 3 for us would have been a big budgeted, you know, spectacle, and what they ended up greenlighting was something much cheaper. That's probably the.
And now they can go, people just aren't that interested in Hellboy instead of that Hellboy.
right. That's exactly. So who knows?
All right. Well, that'd be neat. I think it'd be fun if Guillermo just took it back again and made a good one someday.
Oh, I know. Well, someday. Well, another Doug, by the way, Doug Arniakowski. He's a director who does tons of episodic television. I met him. Doug Arniakowski directed. He directed me in my. I played a DC Comics villain, Deathbolt, on an episode of Arrow.
Green Arrow, yeah.
And then I crossed over to The Flash. And Doug Arniakowski directed both of my episodes of that show franchise. And then he came over to Star Trek Discovery, and he's directed several episodes of Star Trek Discovery in the meantime, too. So we get along great.
It seems like you only know, especially considering you know me and Doug Mellard now, it seems like you only know top-notch Dougs.
Oh, only the good ones. Exactly. Exactly. Well, yeah, you know, the older I get, the more I realize that this is not a young person's name anymore. Have you noticed that at all? That like
is that what's happening? Are there no kids named Doug these days?
I think there's no kids named Doug. Exactly. Well, I'll tell you, I was at an El Pollo Loco. Here's the story. So the teenager ringing me up said, can I have a name? That's Doug. And I had to spell it D-O-U-G. Have you done this with baristas, you guys? Doug, and you get the D-U-G or the D-O-U-G-H even?
Right.
Yeah. They throw the dough in.
Adding an H to, and then turning it into dough.
Yes. Happens all the time. So this kid, I said, Doug, is this probably a name you don't recognize? He goes, no, my dad's name is Doug. And he gave me and he gave me a senior discount just because.
Is his dad's name spelled with an H there?
No. Yeah. Boy, a loco, he got it right. This kid got it right.
Okay, good. You seem like to be the only guest that knows a lot of Dougs. We haven't had, it's just not a very common name, but you actually know quite a few.
Well, that's because I'm old. So I've had time to rack up a lot of Dougs. Yeah.
It helps. But also, like, do you recall having any friends or knowing any other Dougs, like when you were young, like in school? Because I didn't know any in high school.
No, and I did not know any other Dougs in high school. No.
Yeah. And you were in Indiana?
Indiana. Yeah. Which should have been more of a, you know, very Midwestern average, you know, kind of. Yeah.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like kind of the name is special in its own way, just because it's, you know, people aren't using it as much. And then, you know, this standard thing we ask everybody is like, when you do hear somebody calling you Douglas, does it mean you're in trouble?
It was for me, yes. Douglas Jones. Right. But I was Douglas in grade school because that's what came off the roll call, you know, Douglas. So a lot of the kids are like, oh, Douglas. And it never really rang true because it seemed too formal for the guy who wants to be called Dougie. Don't you think?
Right. Yeah.
I found that teachers would just shorten it to Doug without even running it by
him. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Right.
It's like, if your name Douglas, people just call you Doug, you know, just very casually. Like, if you really wanted to be called Douglas, you'd have to be constantly asking people to call you that.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Right.
But when I'm talking to somebody like on the phone or something, you know, like trying to, you know, book a ticket or whatever.
Yeah.
It's also like if you're like in a loud bar or something, Doug is a hard name to
right. You know, it is. And you know what else? If someone's going to not remember your name correctly, if they're going to mix you with another name, the most common mix up I get is Greg.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And have you guys to get that too?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, which is weird because it makes sense. It's four letters, ends in G. I think I get the visual of it, but yeah, but Doug, Greg, yeah. I mean, Don or Derek, but Greg?
Right.
Yeah. And then that, of course, is short for Gregory. Thank God we don't, the long for Doug isn't Duggery.
Duggery. Duggery. That sounds like the big building where they make Dougs, the Duggery.
No, I got to go down to the Duggery and get my
yeah. I got to go pick it up another Doug at the Duggery.
That's actually my full name. It's Duggery.
Duggery. Yeah. I actually kind of like that. What's the actor's name? Is it Doug Ray? Oh. Isn't there a Doug Ray?
Doug Ray Scott.
That's it. Doug Ray Scott. Yes.
Yeah. He was going to be Wolverine and then couldn't do it for some reason. And then Hugh Jackman swooped in.
Well, that was a twist of fate.
Yeah, I made it up, but I'm pretty sure that happened.
Wow.
Yeah. What about the, have you ever run into a guy named David Hoffman, the actor? He is currently portraying the part of Doug in Liberty Mutual commercials.
Oh, no, I have not met him, no.
In those commercials, though, where they go the emu and Doug.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, yes.
That's the whole punchline, is that the guy named Doug. Is fucking billed to a bird.
Right. I know. Right. And the bird looks just like I did in high school, too. But I was called ostrich all the time in high school. Oh, even though emus and ostriches kind of similar. He had long necks and kind of goofy faces.
Yeah, so I you know, I'd love, we're just getting into talking to people who have played characters named Doug, because you know, speaking of that, George Clooney was Doug on ER.
Oh, that's right. Ah, yeah, right.
Probably the coolest Doug ever in terms of you know, fictional characters.
Right. Handsome doctor. Yeah, I'll take it.
Yeah. Douglas Adams was, of course, a great Doug, but we obviously can't talk to him.
Right. Or Douglas Fairbanks.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Justin Bartha played a Doug in the Hangover movies.
Kidnapped and he's barely in the movies.
Yeah. I know. Typical Doug. You know, fashion.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, the whole movie's set up around, you know, concern about a Doug. So that's good.
Yeah.
They do say Doug a lot in the Hangover movie.
They do. And like you said, they were concerned. That's nice to see. Someone care.
People care about us. Well, Doug Jones, you've been an absolute delight to talk to today.
Oh, as have you.
Can you give us a couple, you know, sound effects before you go? Thank you.
Ew. Do you have anything to plug, Doug?
Let us see. Well, okay. First of all, yes, I mentioned Star Trek Discovery before. Season 3 of Star Trek Discovery is in the can, finished. Post-production was halted for a minute, so our premiere date was pushed back a bit. But they did finally settle on October 15th, when Season 3 will start airing on CBS All Access. So that's good news to look forward to. I do have a remake of Nosferatu that has been been in post-production for years now, unfortunately, on an independent budget. They've been doing it as can. So that's still coming. And I saw a rough cut and it is actually gorgeous. So
the makeup in that again. Oh my God. Was, amazing.
It is stunning. Stunning. And other than that, there's a YouTube channel, very, very popular YouTube channel with over tens of millions of views. Bat in the Sun, they're called. They do lots of comic-y, superhero-y kind of short films and talk show kind of things. Anyway, they did a Batman short film that they wanted me to come be a guest cameo in that I filmed yesterday. And I'm not going to tell you what character yet, but it's a character that fans have been clamoring for me to play for many, many years. So that's going to be a short on YouTube that'll be coming out shortly.
Oh, my God. All right.
That's great. What about you, Doug Mellor? Do you have anything promotable at this point?
I should have a date for my new comedy album, Fart Safari 3, Fart Hard with a Vengeance. Sorry, Doug Jones. I'm hoping in the next couple of weeks to have that date, but it's going to be coming out in the next few months, and I'm very excited about that. But yeah, just find me on social at Doug Mellor. Yeah.
Well, you and I will be back again next week talking to, one or more Dougs. Thank you. Thank you to Doug Jones. You're an all-star. Yeah. And we always end each episode with some sort of pun with the word Doug in it. And I'm thinking that it'd be fun to call this one Three Dougs.
It's a deal. I'm one of them. Yay.
Yeah. As always, this has been Three Dougs.
Got it.